Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and I got another lesson from CEDH for us today. CEDH is a metagame within the Commander format that sits at one extreme with highly consistent, highly efficient decks. While not all cards are equally powerful in all formats, or even in all metagames, there are lessons to be learned from how people are brewing with the most powerful cards available. One of the big differences between CEDH and other games of Commander is the cadence of the game, how the game flows from one stage to the next. And today, I want to propose a model for how we can look at the different stages of the game. There have been a number of different models that have been proposed in the past. We're going to look at a few of those models first, then I'm going to propose my model. One of the models used commonly to describe a game is early game, mid game, late game. Under this model, early game is usually understood to be when you're accumulating the resources you need to reach the mid game, and in the mid game, you're trading resources towards your deck's game plan. Focus decks are trying to trade resources for board state and hand sculpting to transition into the late game, while value decks want to set up resource engines to create a resource imbalance while keeping the focus decks in check. In late game, people are trying to actively win the game. The problem with this model is primarily that in multiplayer games, players will inevitably progress through the stages of the game at different rates, and there will be a back and forth or a stop-go progression through the stages. Another interesting model that is often used is the theory that limited resources uses, quadrant theory. This was developed to look at limited formats in Magic. In quadrant theory, limited resources hosts will describe a card as being better when you're ahead, better when you're behind, better at parity, or better when you're developing. It's really good when you're trying to just mentally map where you stand relative to a single opponent. And as I said, it was originally developed to analyze when cards would be good in a game of Magic in a limited format. Under this model, focus decks are often trying to be the ones ahead, while value decks are trying to get caught back up while they're behind the focus decks. The problem with this model is that it really wasn't developed with multiplayer in mind, and mapping your relationship to three different opponents is hard enough, let alone mapping your opponent's relationships to one another. One model that I do find very useful is the model of the critical turn. This has been described in many ways by many different people. The best description that I could find is that the critical turn is the turn in which the fastest decks in the metagame can reach a critical mass and become unstoppable. The turn in which slower decks must have a way to disrupt those faster decks or be willing to lose the game. The utility in this model is that it identifies one of the key concepts of Magic formats and metagames. If you're not prepared by the time the critical turn comes, you're probably going to be behind by a significant margin, and your probability of winning the game is rapidly dwindling. One reason I really like this model is that it accounts for the stop-and-go nature of multiplayer Magic. Commander, being a multiplayer format, is often at its best and most interactive when players are constantly going for it, trying to execute on their game plans and then being stopped by opponents. This leads to a back and forth of players trying to get ahead, drawing attention from the opponents who want to keep them from winning, and then being knocked back behind. Quoting the Philosophy of Commander article from the Rules Committee's website, at the end of an ideal Commander game, someone will have won, but all participants will have had the opportunity to express themselves through their deck building and gameplay. I think there's a lot of similarity in multiplayer Magic to kart racer video games like Mario Kart or Diddy Kong Racing, where the person in the lead also has the most opponents gunning for them. This will mean the lead will often change frequently between multiple players, as everyone tries to pull ahead using all the tricks that they can come up with. But if someone rockets so far ahead as to be out of reach, the outcome can almost be a foregone conclusion, and no interaction will likely be relevant. Taking into account the stop-and-go nature of multiplayer, as well as the concept of the critical turn, I'm going to propose a model that I'm going to call Ready, Set, Go. It might be helpful to think of the first stage, Ready, as getting ready. At this point, you're not yet able to interact with your opponents or affect the board in a meaningful way. Your goal now is to establish a stable base of resources that you can use to advance your game plan. A good way to estimate how long it takes your deck to get ready is to look at your mana ramp package. Is most of your ramp costing 2 mana? 3 mana? 0 mana? Go take a look at some of your deck lists. It can be very enlightening to see for yourself. Once you're ready, you're going to enter the stage set, or the kind of shorthand for all set up. At this point, you have a stable resource base that you can use to enact your game plan, and the main goal at this time is to iterate on your game plan until you're ready to go for the win. As a rule of thumb, you can usually reliably cast multiple spells in a turn or take multiple game actions in a turn once you're all set up. This allows you to continue to develop your resources or advance your game plan and hold up interaction. You have the capability at this point to interact meaningfully with what your opponents are trying to do, their game plans, as well as the ability to impact the board or the stack. Focus decks are generally going to have a shorter period of time spent in this stage than value decks are. While value decks are hoping to get farther ahead during this stage, while having the tools needed to interact with the more focused decks, we're trying to go for it sooner than they will. Some playgroups really enjoy the setup stage. Battlecruiser Commander, as it's colloquially known, often features massive, built-up boards with minimal interaction as players jockey for position and wait to unleash their forces until after someone else often has attempted to break the stalemate, while other playgroups consider this kind of a board stall to be very unfun and boring. Once you're all set up, the next step is to go for it. At this point, your game plan has let you reach the stage where you can push towards winning the game. You're willing to trade resources for game actions now, ready to shorten the clock that your opponents have to answer your threats. As I mentioned previously, focus decks will usually leapfrog here after a short period of time in the setup stage, while value decks will usually have accumulated a significant resource advantage in the setup stage before they reach this point. A good rule of thumb here is that you can reliably storm off, or at the very least lap your opponents in terms of game actions taken. You may be able to take an unbounded number of actions because of a combo you've assembled. You may be able to cast and resolve multiple spells to assemble the combo you're looking for. You may be able to resolve game actions with the advantage of the setup you've already done during the setup stage. This is one of the reasons why players tend to have an intuitive sense to ask, "Did you win?" or "Is the game over?" when someone takes a large number of actions in a single turn. This is also one of the reasons why Paradox Engine was banned. It generated an enormous number of game actions, which didn't always actually translate into progressing the game towards a conclusion. I'm definitely not the first person to recognize that taking many game actions is often one of the ways to recognize that someone is trying to win the game. There's a really interesting article from back in November over at Card Kingdom by Tom Anderson, where he describes a theoretical power level system called ROAR, an acronym for Resolutions or Attacks Required to Win the Game. How many spells do you need to cast? How many activations of an effect? How many attacks do you need before the game is locked up and a reasonable opponent would just concede? It might be simpler to ask, how many turns before you close out the game this way? In general, the more turns you give your opponents after you go for it, the closer your deck is to being casual table friendly. One of the reasons that I personally find this Ready, Set, Go model to be helpful is that it does a good job of describing why a game might feel mismatched. If you feel like your games are sometimes mismatched against your opponents, it might be because you're playing at a different stage of the game than your opponents are. Increasing your deck's consistency and efficiency will both decrease your critical turn, the turn at which you're going to progress from the setup to going for it. To be clear, you don't have to make your critical turn equal to the critical turn of the entire metagame, but if you're not reliably at least getting set up by the time the critical turn comes for your particular metagame, you're likely going to feel overwhelmed or even helpless. A good place to start is by looking at your ramp package. If you're relying on Cultivate and Kadama's Reach, or your early mana rocks are Chromatic Lantern and Worn Power Stone, you're probably still getting ready on turn 3, which means you're likely not going to be set by the time someone is going for it if the critical turn is a turn 3. Indeed, if the critical turn in your metagame is around turn 4, you may not be able to play those mana rocks and expect to be able to untap on turn 4 if someone has already gone for it and presented an unanswerable or unstoppable threat at that point. But mana ramp isn't everything. Look at your package of answers as well. If your opponents are trying to win games with Torment of Hailfire or Villainous Wealth, you should probably start looking for ways to interact with the stack, or minimize their ability to ramp to use those win conditions. Similarly, if your opponents are playing low to the ground with aggressive creatures and getting in with vampires with Edgar Markov, having more reliable access to sweepers to reset the board of those small creatures is probably what you'll need to do to interact with it meaningfully. The lesson from CEDH here is that decks of a similar power level can often play very good games together, and part of the reason that the entire label of CEDH was developed was to attract players looking for that style of a game to bring decks of that consistent power level to the table. In CEDH, there is a lot of open and forward communication between the players as they try to share how their decks work, writing up full primers on what they can expect their decks to do, as well as ways their deck can be answered by opponents. It may be a good idea in your playgroup to talk to your opponents, ask them how their decks are usually going to win the game, look at their ramp packages, ask them to estimate what the critical turn of their deck is. For example, my Scrappy Cat deck, which I did my first video deck primer on, runs about 15 pieces of ramp, with the average mana value of that ramp package being 2.267. It's going to go for it by casting multiple creatures in a turn to amass an army of 4/4 tokens, and then swinging on the next turn. With Oketra costing 5 mana herself, we're probably looking at somewhere between turn 5.5 to 6 that Oketra would consider to be her turn where she would be, well, reasonably expected to go for it. Torbran was the second deck that I did a video deck primer on. This deck runs only 6 pieces of ramp, with an average mana value of 2.167. And he's going to go for it the turn that he can attack with multiple bodies, and usually have both Torbran and a second damage multiplier in play. Torbran is a much more focused deck than Oketra. This deck is probably looking around turn 4.5 to 5 as its critical turn. If I wanted to make sure that both Torbran and Oketra could coexist within the same metagame comfortably, I would want to make sure that the slower Oketra deck, which is more of a value deck anyway, has the capability to interact meaningfully, being able to remove Torbran's various damage multipliers with some form of point removal, or have adequate sweepers to be able to remove Torbran and the bodies that he has set up on the field in order to keep from losing the game too quickly. As a piece of comparison, my CEDH Yuriko, Tiger's Shadow deck, runs about 13 pieces of ramp with an average mana value of 0.769. And it's going for it around the critical turn in CEDH of 3, where I can expect to have tutored for and have protection for a card like Ad Nauseam or Peer into the Abyss in order to draw a large chunk of my deck and then use that to cast Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation to win. This deck is likely going to be orders of magnitude faster than what either Torbran or Oketra are capable of interacting with in any kind of meaningful way. Yuriko's ramp package is just too efficient, and she has too many tutors to enable her to consistently get the cards she needs in order to assemble her A plus B win the game combo with Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation. So another lesson from CEDH here is to recognize how and when people are going for it. If an opponent is seeing a significant percentage of the cards from their deck as resources they have access to, such as cards in the hand, cards on board, or cards in the graveyard, they're probably going for it. Adnaz in CEDH is the poster child for this, and many consider it to be the signature card of the format. 3 black-black and a chunk of life can turn into 20-plus cards, and 1/5 of your deck is certainly a significant percentage. If an opponent has tutored multiple times, they're probably going for it. Conditional tutors often telegraph this nicely. The player who just cast Worldly Tutor to grab Craterhoof Behemoth is literally showing the rest of the table how he or she plans to end the game in the next turn. So what do you think? How long does it take your deck to get ready? How long does your setup take? When are you generally ready to go for it? And what is the critical turn you often see in your particular playgroup? Looking at this model, ready, set, go, can be a very helpful way to look at your metagame, understand where your deck fits into it, and potentially address any of the issues you may be experiencing with mismatched levels of decks. Not every deck is a 7, and being a little bit more granular in understanding how your deck actually functions on a turn-by-turn basis can be really helpful, not just to make you a better player, but to get you better games of Commander. If you have other thoughts on Ready, Set, Go, or other models you really like to describe how your games of Commander progress, leave us a comment on YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. On Twitter, we're at GemstoneMineMTG, or you can send us an email. We are GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John. This is Gemstone Mine. Take care.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.